We're going to start out this morning with a top 10 list. Here are my top 10 reasons Christians look forward to heaven. Number 10, it's not hell. I'm halfway serious with that, because the alternative makes heaven pretty appealing to a lot of people. Number 9, finally God will make things right. Wouldn't you agree that things in this world aren't always fair? And in heaven, we look forward to the time when God will make things right. The faithful will finally get their rewards and the unfaithful will get theirs, right? Number 8, no tears. That's kind of cool. That's what the Bible says. It says He will wipe every tear from their eyes. Number 7, no death. Number 6, no pain. That's what He says. It says there'll be no more death, no sorrow, no crying, nor pain, because all of these things are gone forever. And that's cool, because that stuff makes life hard here on earth sometimes, doesn't it? Number 5, how about this one? A brand new earth. That's what it says. Brand new world. Bible says there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. Can you imagine how stunningly beautiful that world will be? Completely unpolluted. Number 4. Kind of cool. Somewhere in that brand new world, we're going to have a brand new home. Jesus said, there are many rooms in my Father's house. I'm going to prepare a place for each one of you. Brand new house built by God. That ought to be neat. Brand new body. That's what it says. Brand new body. And different than this one, because a lot of times in this world, this body just gets kind of hard on us, doesn't it? This one's cool. Number 2, a reunion with friends. And here's the deal. I mean, most of us, I mean, all of our friends here on earth are twits sometimes, right? But in heaven, all of the twit is taken away. Can you imagine being everything and all of your friends being everything that they're supposed to be, everything they were created to be, surrounded by friends who are never grumpy, never self-centered, never boring, and never mean? And then here's the top one for most people. This grand reunion with family. You know, the parent who meant so much to you, the husband or wife or child who has died. And we look forward to that time knowing that when we see them again, their bodies won't be broken anymore. In fact, they might be so dazzling that you can barely recognize them. And I haven't even mentioned the buffets in heaven where you could eat anything that you want without getting fat. Amazing golf courses, the cool cars that you can drive as fast as you want, and the endless leisure, right? Here's the deal. Most people can get pretty excited about a heaven like that without even noticing that we're missing the very most important piece. Because we've missed it. We've missed it. I mean, a guy named Piper puts it like this. He says, if you could have heaven with no sickness, all of the friends that you ever had on earth, all of the food that you ever liked, all of the leisure activities that you've ever enjoyed, all the natural beauties you could ever imagine, all the physical pleasures you've ever tasted, no human conflict, no natural disasters, could you be satisfied with heaven? Could you be satisfied with that heaven? Could you be satisfied with that kind of heaven if Christ wasn't there? And most of us, if we were honest, would probably say, well, maybe. I'd probably be okay with that. Because for most of us, what we want most in life is not God, but what God gives us. You buy that? We settle for far, far too little. What we want most is not God. We want what He gives us, I think. I mean, when we think about heaven, we go to Revelation chapter 21, verse 4. Because we love the part where it says He's going to wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there's going to be no more death, no sorrow, no crying, nor pain. All of these things are gone forever. We fixate on verse 4 and almost entirely miss verse 3. Verse 3 says, look, look, look. God's home is now among His people. And He's going to live with us. And we're going to be His people. And God himself is going to be with us. And did you know that that is the part of heaven that God is looking forward to? Doing life with his kids? His kids with him? His kids doing life with him the way we were created to live? For God, it's not about a new heaven and a new earth and a new home and new bodies and new reunions. It's about the with him part. Now, I'll be perfectly honest. Ordinarily, when I think about heaven, I don't think much about the with him part. I don't know about you. Because for the most part, I've missed it. And I've told you before that for years I didn't want to go to heaven at all, right? Preachers would talk about harps and choirs. I hated choir. They'd talk about these amazing worship services that would go on forever. Well, even a good service, an hour, hour and a half, I'm about ready to be done and go home. They'd talk about the reunion we'd have in heaven, and I'd look around and I'd say, man, there's a whole bunch of these people I don't want to spend eternity with. But I figured it'd beat hell. Maybe not by a lot. Because I missed it. I figured that eternal boredom was probably better than eternal pain. I missed it. You see, for me, most of the time, being a Christian isn't about doing life with God. And if it's not a priority down here, why would I expect it to be a priority up there? We miss it a lot, I think. I mean, even the songs that we sang a few minutes ago missed it. The sweet by and by, when the roll is called up yonder, I'll fly away. They talk about the amazing reunions we're going to have, the new homes, the new songs, the no pain, the joys that will never end. And that's cool, but it's not the heart of it. I mean, listen to these words from a song about heaven that we sing, okay? You can hear this one on the radio sometimes. It says this, and it's a beautiful picture of heaven. It goes like this: hurts that don't linger, hearts that don't break, no disappointments, no sorrow to take, life with no crying and hands that don't fight, days that don't end with darkness of night. That's what heaven will be like, where we'll never be alone, never lonely. That's what heaven will be like. And it keeps going. It's this beautiful picture. Friends that don't leave you, smiles that don't fade, nobody's hurting, no one's afraid, no hungry children, loved ones don't die, no sad farewells, there'll be no more goodbyes. That's what heaven's going to be like. And it's a wondrous picture, isn't it? Except it misses the very most important thing. C.S. Lewis is amazing to me. He's one of the greatest Christian writers ever. And here's a scene from one of the ends of one of the Chronicles of Narnia, the voyage of the Dawn Treader. This is what happens. "Please, Aslan," said Lucy, "before we go, will you tell us when we can come back to Narnia again? Please. And oh, do make it soon." "Dearest," said Aslan very gently, "you and your brother will never come back to Narnia." "Oh, Aslan," said Edmund and Lucy together in despairing voices. "You're too old, children," said Aslan, "and you must begin to come close to your own world now." And here's the part that takes my breath away. "It isn't Narnia, you know," sobbed Lucy. "It's not about Narnia. It's you. We shan't meet you there. And how can we live? How can we live if you're not there?" It's not Narnia. It's you. It's not heaven. It's not streets of gold. It's not beautiful homes and beautiful bodies and lavish buffets and wondrous reunions. It's God. If anybody thinks they could be satisfied with heaven if God was not there, we've missed it. And I wish, I wish my relationship with God was so rich that I could sob. It isn't heaven, you know. It's you. How could we ever want heaven, God, if you weren't there? I'd like you to pray with me for a moment. The prayer of one of the greatest Christian teachers. Don't close your eyes. The prayer is going to be on screen, and I'd just like you to read it with me. Aloud. Are you ready? Oh God, I am painfully conscious of my need for grace. I am ashamed by my lack of desire. Oh God, I want to want you. I long to be filled with longing. I thirst to be more thirsty still. Give me the grace to rise and follow you up from this misty lowland where I have wandered so long. We miss it and it's hurting. You guys like Jeff Foxworthy? I really like him. Jeff Foxworthy's pretty funny. You might be a redneck if you've been married three times and still have the same in-laws. You might be a redneck if you think Taco Bell is the Mexican phone company. You might be a redneck if when the trooper says you have any ID, you answer, "About what?" You might be a redneck if fifth grade was the best 6 years of your life. Mine aren't nearly as funny as his, but they might be true. You might have missed it. You might have missed it if you think, well, I guess heaven beats hell. You might have missed it if you secretly tremble at the thought of spending eternity with these people. You might have missed it if you fear that being a Christian means you'll have to miss out on the good stuff in life. You might have missed it if you think that being a Christian is about a life of poverty and self-denial. You might have missed it if you think the best Christians are just a little too self-righteous and judgmental. You might have missed it if you think that being a Christian is about wallowing in guilt and shame. You might have missed it if you think that being a Christian means checking your brain at the door. You see, we settle for too little. I think most Christians have this idea about Christianity that it basically means believing a few things about God, doing a few things like church, and cutting down on some of our vices. And now I'm Christian. If I believe in Jesus and I go to church and I cuss a little bit less, I'm a Christian, right? I've missed it. Did you know that most people who make a decision for Christ disconnect from the church within 8 to 12 weeks? Within 2 to 3 months of making a decision for Jesus, most people either become an aborted believer or a casual Christian. The simple truth is that what they found here was not compelling. They tried it and they had no fizz. They watched it and it had no spark. And because it didn't stir, they didn't stay. Did you know that in America, 8 out of 10 kids will participate in church during their teen years? But the vast majority will take a permanent detour from active faith at some time shortly after getting their driver's license. Only 2 out of 10 teenage converts maintain their Christian belief and practice between their teens and the end of their 20s. The vast majority cross over to the other side, pronouncing Christianity boring, irrelevant, and out of touch. Sometimes that's because we've missed it. We have tried to foist on them a Christianity that is no more than believing a few things about God, adding church, and eliminating a few vices, and it's simply not exciting. Did you know that our biggest problem in evangelism is not that people out there need to try church? Our problem is they've tried it and found it wanting. Most Americans are not unchurched. They are dechurched. They've been here and done that. For most Americans, Christianity is not something new and untested. It's uninteresting, uncompelling. They found it ignorable because we've missed it. Guys, being a Christian isn't about believing a few things about God, adding a few do's and subtracting a few don'ts. That's not it. That's not compelling. That's not what people would give anything to possess. That's not what people would die for. You see, for too many people, Christianity is about what God can do for me. God can rescue me. He can forgive me. He can set me free. He can answer my prayers. He can solve my problems. He can give me a heaven filled with unbelievable splendors. Do you hear what's at the center of that kind of Christian? It's me. What I want. What I need. It's not about God. It's about me. And the heart of this thing isn't about what God can give me. The heart of this thing is about God. Have you ever seen a Christian who gets it? And have you ever been around a Christian who does get it? A Christian who has a faith so vibrant that it literally takes your breath away? Have you ever watched a Christian who has this amazing spiritual strength, this powerful peace, this joy that just exudes in their lives? And I've known a few, haven't you? We had one just move away from us here a couple of months ago when Mr. Cook moved to Texas. We lost a Christian here who got it. My preaching partner, Randy, got to spend quite a few camps with Rich Mullins, a pretty famous Christian artist. When Randy talks about Rich Mullins, he says, this guy knew Jesus. He got it. And stuff didn't matter to him. He owned a few clothes, beat-up car. Later on, he got rid of his car, so he didn't have one at all. He didn't miss the TV he didn't own or the hobbies that consume us. And it wasn't because Rich couldn't afford them. He'd made millions, given it all away. Because basically what made him tick was this love affair with Jesus. He got it. Randy and I both knew Lauren Stuckenbrock. Julie remembers Lauren Stuckenbrock. He was just a kid. I mean, you don't have to be old. Just a kid, younger than we were when I was in seminary. Brilliant kid. Talented musician. He had a love for God that was absolutely contagious. He had this ability to focus on you so that in that moment you knew that you were the most important thing in the world. This kid just awed us. But he got it. He got it. I saw it in a preacher that I had in Johnson City, Frank Smith. I wanted to grow up to be like him. I saw it one of my professors in seminary, Toyozo Nakurai. I wanted to talk to God like him. I've seen glimpses of it in some of you. Haven't you? Seen glimpses of it in people around you in this room? And it can take your breath away. Because, guys, it isn't about Narnia. It's about God. Here's the bottom line. Here's a foundational truth that we're just going to have to grasp. We miss it because we treat God as a means to an end rather than the end in itself. We don't see Christianity as doing life with God, camaraderie with God, intimacy with God, a love affair with God. We think about what God can do for me, what God can give me. And it doesn't satisfy us. Please hear this. I mean, the reason that Christianity is not compelling to so many people, to so many of them, and to so many of us who sit here and go through the motions, is that we've made God the means rather than the end. It's not about salvation. It's not about heaven. It's not about the blessings that God can pour into your life. It's about God. It's about with God. It's about doing life with God. That's the heart of being a Christian in this world, and that's the heart of heaven. And that's what can make this thing transforming and compelling. That's what can make this thing to die for. Do you believe that? And there's a great old teacher. His name is Tozer. He says, God, being who He is, must always be sought for Himself, and never as a means towards something else. He says, whoever seeks God as a means to an end will not find God. The mighty God, the maker of heaven and earth, will not be one of many treasures. He won't even be the chief of all treasures. He is all in all, or he'll be nothing. It's not about what God can do for us. It's about God. It's about doing life with God. Who in their right mind would want heaven if God wasn't there? It isn't Narnia, you know. How can we live if you're not there? Now listen to what the Bible says, because these guys got it. And I want to get it. I want to feel these scriptures. I want to know God the way these guys know God. I want this kind of relationship with God. Psalmist says, as a deer pants for streams of water, my soul pants. Not for what God can give me, not for God's gifts. My soul pants for you, God, he says. I want to feel that way. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. Where can I go? When can I go and meet with God? He says. Listen to this one from the Psalms. Oh God, you're my God. I search for you. Not for salvation, not for what you can do for me. My soul thirsts for you. My body longs for you, he says. I've seen you in your sanctuary. I've gazed upon your power and glory, and I know that your unfailing love is better than life itself. And that's how I want to feel about God. And that's what I want people that I love to see in me. That's what I want you to feel about God. Because we've settled for too little, haven't we? Listen to this one. Whom have I in heaven but you? Think about that. Who do I have in heaven but you? What would a new body and a new house and a new land with all my best friends and all of my family gathered together be without you? He says. He says, I desire you more than anything on earth. And I desire to desire him more than anything on earth. I don't do it well because I'm so daggone self-absorbed. But I want to pray that line. He says, my health may fail. My spirit may grow weak. What does that matter? Because God remains the strength of my heart. Because God is mine forever, he says. They get it. They get it. I want it. I want you to want it. I want to get so stuck on Revelation chapter 21, verse 3 that I never make it to Revelation 21, verse 4. Now the dwelling of God is with us. And he's going to live with us. And we will be his people. And God himself will be with us. And he will be our God. And that's enough. It's enough. Don't you want to feel in your heart, it isn't Narnia, you know? How can we live if you're not there? Wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't that transform you? Wouldn't that transform this place? We settle for too little. We're like kids all enamored with the wrapping paper while the gift remains untouched in the box. We settle to be servants when God wants us to be kids. We settle for grudgingly giving up a little in hopes that God gives back a lot. We settle for rules when God himself is offering to do life with us. Sometimes we settle, I hope, because we don't even know there's more. We're going to try to fix that this year. Sometimes we settle because we haven't seen enough other Christians pursuing that kind of life with God. And I hope a lot of us will try to fix that this year. Sometimes I fear we settle because we've fallen into a lie that this is as good as it gets. Satan laughs when we swallow that one. Maybe I'm too cynical. It's possible that I'm projecting my own struggles onto the rest of you. But I know that I miss it a lot. And I suspect that some of you guys miss it a lot. And I want more. And I hope you want more. So we're going to try to spend some time trying to find it. And I hope that it's going to turn our world upside down. Now, I'm going to leave you hanging this morning because I'm really not going to talk about what it is. We're going to start delving into that next week. If you want to hear that part, just come back.